Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday, and welcome to P4P Real Talk. You know what that means. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, like what, Kaylin Patterson? Okay, well, Kaylin, I know he's here somewhere, but it sounds like he's not able to respond. So like a Mack truck through ice cream, then check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let's talk. I am Desiree Fletcher, and our strong but silent Kaylin Patterson. Together we make up P4P Real Talk, and hopefully he will be joining us soon. If you weren't able to join us earlier this week, we had a great show with Keith Hunter. He is an awesome advocate for the natural bodybuilding community. He's a natural bodybuilding pro himself, and he is also a promoter. And he's getting ready for the Memphis Muscle Showdown that's coming up October 23rd. And then also the IPE World NAMBF Natural Amateur Nationals. Those are coming up November 11th as well. Both promise to be great shows. So if you are stage ready or almost stage ready, be sure that you check those out. And even if you're not looking to get on stage, and you're in the area of either of those shows, you know, go show your support, buy a ticket, and cheer on all the athletes that are there. They would love to have you. And it's always more fun when you're competing when there are tons and tons of fans in the audience, and not just fans, but rowdy fans. Fans that get loud and noisy and clap and hoot and holler and all of that good stuff. So we want you guys to be there. And speaking of shows coming up, the Minnesota Mayhem, I know you guys probably get tired of us talking about that, but the Minnesota Mayhem is finally here. And so things are gearing up. Check-ins are going to happen soon. Goodie bags are packed. Athletes are getting tanned. This show is going to be here before you know it, and it's promising to be a great one. So I am super excited to get all the details about that. I'm a little sad. Kaylin is going to be covering that show without me. I'm not able to make it this weekend, but hopefully. I know. Oh, there you are. Is that you, Kaylin Patterson?
That's me. Yes, it is.
Oh, we finally have you. But I
you
know.
You have me like a Mack truck through ice cream.
Like ice cream, I tell you what. I know Kaylin's going to do a great job covering that show. And I know Leaf and Stephanie are ready for him to be there. So it's going to be a good one. Are you ready, Kaylin Patterson, for all the awesomeness that's going to be happening this weekend?
Yes, I am. I'm very excited because, you know, we've both had personal encounters with this show. And we know the caliber of show that he brings, and you know everything that he puts into it, his heart included. And it's just so nice to see that the athletes are so well represented all around that show and venue. So it's just a blessing, and I'm glad that I can be a part of it. I'm sad that you cannot. Oh, sad face emoji.
Sad face. I know. I know. But, you know, the show must go on. I can't make it to the Mayhem, and I am totally sad because I really wanted to connect with a lot of the folks that are going to be here, there. But I will be able to make the NGA Natural Peoria Championships on October 28th. And I'm actually going to be sticking my toe into the judging waters, and I'm going to be a test judge at that show. So I'm super excited that I'm still going to be able to do that and round out my 2017 competitive season with a little bit of a different experience. And, you know, I'm still training and prepping for 2018, so we're going to see what that brings. But, yeah, that's what I've got going on through the rest of the year, and I know Kaylin will be there as well. So, and we're planning on being at the IPE World. So lots of stuff going on, and we hope to bring – all of that and more to you. And speaking of which, we've got something tonight that we're trying to bring to you. And a great guy. I don't know, he must have been so ready for pizza at the NGA East Coast Natural that we totally did not get the interview after he won the men's lightweight bodybuilding category for the open class. But as fate would have it, we have Kurt Ziegler on our show tonight. And Kurt, please say hello to everyone in listener land and tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everybody out there. My name is Kurt. How you doing? Hey, guys, how are you? It's good talking to you again. My name's Kurt Ziegler. I'm from Pitts, PA, born and raised. I've been lifting since I was 13 years old. And actually, when I was seeing the first Rocky movie and I saw all the wonderful things he was able to do through his body, you know, and he wasn't the smartest guy. And I actually had trouble in school, you know, dyslexia and whatnot. And so I started lifting out with my concrete Sears weights in the basement. And
oh, wow, graduated. Yeah. that's the throwback right there. It's Thursday throwback, yeah. Right there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember those. Don't drop them.
Yeah. Oh, they cracked into a million pieces, remember?
Perfect for Thursday, man. Perfect.
Oh, yeah. And it all started right from. But actually, when I saw like the Rocky III, like, and Mr. T was doing the chins, the, you know, for his back. And, yeah, I actually
Bubba
set up something like that in my basement. Yeah. And, but
this is a guy thing right here. Sorry, this is a guy.
I know. I'm gonna let you guys partake in that bromance we've got going on. But go ahead, carry on.
He had me at the concrete gym. Now he's got the Club of Lang. Oh,
you gotta love that
pain
stuff.
Misery, pain.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been working out ever since, my whole life, you know, and I actually did my first bodybuilding show up at Penn State, actually. There was the Lion Country Classic. It was in 1987, which I took third place in the teenage. Yes, and that's been a journey ever since. I fell off a scaffold 14 months ago, and I broke my wrist. And I took the scaffold. Yeah, I tore the scapulate ligament, and so they had to put a plate and 9 screws in my wrist. And like I said, this was 14 months ago, and then they had to reattach the scapulate ligament. And it took me 6 months of therapies just to learn how to use my fingers again. I couldn't move my fingers.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
it was something. And then I had my second surgery January 27th, this past January 27th. And then a month later, I started back in the gym. And I was at about 184 pounds, and I couldn't fit into any of my clothes because, you know, for an entire year, I couldn't work out. And I started eating ice cream every night again, and, you know, I just got off of everything that I've always believed in doing. That's keeping your diet clean, even if you can't work out as hard from injuries, it's still important to keep your diet clean. You know, allow yourself some treats like once a week, you know, in the off season. But I was sort of destined to get back into my shape that I was in before I got injured. And
mm-hmm.
I got up every morning on an empty stomach, and I did an hour run cardio. And I went home, and I would eat my meals. I basically ate chicken, sweet potatoes, and broccoli for 6 months. I ate about six small meals a day. And I did it for six whole months, and then until I did the show there, the East Coast Classic. So I had, I gave myself a lot of time, and that's important because, you know, your body, especially if you get fat and out of shape, it takes a while for your body to get rid of all that body fat and to start drying out so you look harder and dry on the stage. But I really went at it and worked out 5 days a week with the weights and did cardio 6 days a week and just stuck to the diet and, you know, felt good to get back to where I was, you know, and even though I had to adjust some of my weight training because of my wrist, you know, I couldn't go as heavy on things, and I did a lot of work with bands and with machines and did higher weight and just really strict form and just squeezed the muscle through a full range of motion and just pumped and gorged as much blood as I could in the muscles. And surprisingly, I surprised myself, and it was a good accomplishment, you know. And you know, to get over that limitation that I had.
Yeah, you know, I want to go back to the injury because I think there's there's a big misunderstanding as far as people doing competitions and getting ready for prep and all the other things. And it's always like a hunky-dory thing. It was all laid out for you. The path was so easy to do. And on this show, Des and I have just heard time and time again where it's some really high mountains you guys have got to climb just to get started, you know, much less start a prep. So, you know, what are some of the disclaimers that you have to put out there, you know, when people just thought this is something – that you just picked up and said, hey, I'm going to do this and I won't have any injuries. My family's going to love me and the job's going to be basically doing everything, bending over backwards to make sure that I get to the gym on time and they'll give me special days off and specially treat me so all these things work hand in hand and then I can step on stage and win first place. What do you have to say to the person that thinks that's how it is when you do a prep?
Well, it's you got to take it one day at a time, and I mean, I try to lay out my program, I set my expectations high, and I try to meet them as best as I can, and be consistent and get to the gym every day, regardless how tired you are after work. You know, force yourself to go to the gym because nothing good is going to happen without hard work and without difficulty. I mean, if it was easy, everyone would do it. But the reward is so great, you know, in your well-being. You can't put a price on it. The reward, the gratification you get, it's self individual accomplishment. And you just gotta go to it. You gotta make your mind up to do it and do it. And just every day, make the adjustments. Like I get obsessive, and sometimes I'll I try to write things down. Okay, I gotta do this, and this, and then I'll get to the gym and then my meals. It's just 24-hour a day thing. You know, I get my meals already the night before for the next day. Have everything weighed out. You know, the chicken, sweet potato, the broccoli, pack all the Tupperware. You know, as soon as it's a 24-hour-a-day task. You know, you're cooking your food, you're eating your food, you're working out. You know, you're washing your Tupperware out for the next day. You know, you're resting. It's not like some sports where, you play a game and you go home. You know, you're constantly, you got to stay a step ahead and plan everything out. I plan everything out, the times of my meals every day, and I sit down. And I try to make those expectations every day. That's my ultimate goal. No matter how hard it gets, I stick to it. And you persevere through it. And the reward in the end is just so self-gratifying that, like I said, you can't put a price on it. But it's just one day at a time, and do the best that you can do as an individual to meet those expectations. And if you fall a little short, then you know what? The next day is tomorrow. Then you push a little harder tomorrow. And that's, you know, pretty much pretty my philosophy with you know, prep and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely is a lot of dedicated hard work, as you were saying. And to Kaylin's point, you know, there really are no special concessions. It's always easier when you have a support circle around you that is there to help you through the tough days and that understands. But there are no days off, and there is no, you know, you still have to go to work, you still have to perform, and all the things
right.
that you do, you still have to be a spouse or a parent, and you have to do all of that in stride with your training. And so it is definitely a dedicated commitment for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're gonna say it doesn't matter.
Oh, I was just going to say, we've got several listener questions that are starting to pile up here. So I was going to try and ask a few. I know. Isn't that exciting when the listeners want to get in here? And we've got some varied questions here, so I think this is going to get fun. So, but the first one is kind of serious business. Jim wants to know what the rehab was like after your surgery.
Well, I went to rehab 3 days a week, and I had to learn how to use the fingers again. So it was a lot of work. I had to do exercises at home to try to move my fingers and touch my fingers to each one. And I couldn't even touch my thumb to my pointy finger. But I had to – you had to, like, force with your other hand and do that and just push. It took so long. I mean, it took 6 months just to be able to make a fist. I thought it was never going to happen. But I just kept doing that and then kept going to therapy 3 days a week, physical therapy, and they'd move the wrist up and down and move my fingers and push and pull them. And it's the ligament that when they're reattaching that ligament is what gave me so much problems, because that ligament controls all your fingers and everything. And when I broke the wrist, they had to reattach that. It's like learning how to, you know, walk all over again, but, you know, using your fingers. But and that's pretty much it. And then they started me with, like, light dumbbell work, you know, with, like, a 2-pound dumbbell, moving my wrist up and down and with my fingers and so forth. And it's still a working process, you know?
All right. So do you have full mobility then in that hand, or you said it's still a work in progress, but.
Yeah, I don't have full mobility in my wrist. I got about maybe 25% in my wrist, that's flexion, like flexing it downward, and that's due to the plate and the screws in there and all that, and the ligament, you know, because the scar tissue, they had to reattach on the top of my wrist, the ligament, and that scar tissue keeps building up. But my fingers, yeah, I'm moving them pretty good, still stiff. It's not like my other hand. It'll probably never be the same, but the doctor said I'll never have full mobility. In fact, I had difficulty hitting my front double bicep because I can't arc my wrist all the way down. So I actually got to hold my wrist sort of in an upward motion. And so I had to learn how to flex my bicep in a different way. I had to sort of learn how to – I had to work around it, but – once I made my mind up that I'm going to do this and I'm going to adjust and work around these limitations and I'm going to be able to do it. And, but like I said, you know, it's every day I'm getting better, you know?
And that's the important part. And to tag on to that question. So Bill wants to know if you thought, I mean, it's been difficult, but he wants to know if you thought that you would never be able to use your hand again, and was that something that the doctor said might be a possibility, that you would never be able to use that hand again?
Yeah, the doctor actually said, you'll never have full mobility in it. In fact, in the beginning, they wanted to do two separate surgeries. They were going to put the plate and the screws in and then go back in and do the ligament work later. But they sent me to a specialist that could do the operation, you know, all together in one operation. And he told me, he said, yeah, he says, you're never going to have full mobility in your wrist.
Mm. Wow.
And so forth. And like I said, then about, in this past January, they went back in to scrape out more scar tissue. But the thing is with scar tissue, once you scrape it out, it becomes scar tissue again.
Yes.
Basically, it's your skin sticking to the muscle below it, you know, because when they cut away at stuff, you know, like they cut away the scar tissue, it bleeds in there, and the blood sticks. So it's basically the blood is like a scab, you know, scabbing up and sticking to your epidermis, the bottom of your skin. So your skin's not moving freely over that, and it's just, you know, it's just one of those things. So I didn't get much more mobility once they scraped the scar tissue out, and then the doctor finally just said that, you know, that this is it. This is the best we can do. And that's when I decided that, hey, you know what? I got to work with what God has given me and make the best of it, you know. I surprised myself. Once I put my mind to it and just accepted it, you know, it could have been a lot worse. You know, I could have broke my neck. And I'm lucky to be here talking to you good people, you know.
Definitely, but I mean, because scaffolding, I don't know if everybody's familiar, but scaffolding are, you know, pretty much those structures that you see outside of buildings when they're either doing reconstruction or new construction, cleaning windows, so on and so forth. I can only imagine falling. I mean, how far did you fall? How far up off the ground were you?
Okay, my feet were at 6 feet. And then I was standing upright, so you figure I'm 5'7", so my head was at about, you know 6 foot plus, you know, 5'7", so I guess, what, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, so my head was probably at about 11 feet 7 inches, and the scaffold tipped, and I came straight down as if I was diving into a swimming pool. I mean, straight down. The only thing I remember is my neck, jaw, and back. And I thought I broke my neck because everything got numb and from like my neck on for, you know, a few minutes seemed like I thought I was paralyzed. And it wasn't until then that I looked on and my hand was completely going the other way because it was completely, you know, it was completely broken and dis, you know, it was,
sure,
I forget,
sure,
you
sure.
Know, yeah, it wasn't a flash, it was broke and it was, you know, pointing in the other direction. And that's what ripped the ligament. But, yeah, I came down me breaking my wrist probably saved me from breaking my neck, you know, because I put my hands out. That's the first thing you do when you're falling, you put your hands out.
Yeah.
And, it was something I'll never forget, that's for sure. And
oh, I'm sure. I'm sure
me.
You won't.
Yeah, God
definitely
was with
sounds
me.
Like it.
Yeah.
Said it definitely sounds like it. And I have one more question that I want to ask along these lines before we kind of switch subjects. And Bill was wanting to know if you had any depression after the fall and having to go through rehab and all of that. I mean, and, you know, totally having your life kind of switched up on you, and how supportive your family and friends were during your recovery.
Oh yeah. I mean, I definitely had depression just because I couldn't work out, you know, and that's something I've been doing my whole life. And I walked a lot, once I got to the, you know, probably a month after the first surgery, I would get out and I would take walks, and that helped, just getting fresh air, and I'd walk a little further and further each day. But, yeah, I definitely got depressed, and that's why I started eating a lot more. You know, in the beginning, I was my bodybuilding meals, you know, chicken, rice and vegetables, sweet potatoes, egg whites, and oatmeal. And then slowly, you know, like a domino effect, I was allowing myself treats during the week, which I never do. And then before you know it, you know, I was eating ice cream every day, and it just became an addiction. And which made me more depressed. And then as I gained weight, I couldn't fit my clothes. It's just, but my family, my wife supported me. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better support. My family, they definitely, you know, helped me through some bad times. And I went to church a lot more. And, you know, my priest said to, yes, he said, now that you're off, use this time to get closer to the Lord. And
there you go.
And that helped. Yep. And that helped too. And I think that's how I, once that second surgery was done, I think just my faith, going to the church, praying, you know, and doing, you know, things, you know, outside of myself, getting myself outside of me, trying to help other people. And so once I had that second surgery, a month after that, that was it. I was like, I'm getting back in the gym and I'm going to do what I can do. And I started right there, like my wife said. She's like, you know, you started on that journey and you didn't look back, you know, with the working out and the dieting and everything. And that's been a very, very great journey. I mean, I can't put it into words, you know. It's like a rebirth.
I know. Trust me, I know. Hey, but there's something I'd like to refer back to, because, you know, it seems like you've had challenges basically all your life. And you talked about having dyslexia when you were a child. And, you know, I'm quite familiar with that. And, you know, like if a parent or teacher doesn't truly understand what dyslexia is, you would be basically either put in a slow class or one like a challenged learning. How was that? And how did you use that to basically get through this new thing, which, you know, basically was an inhibitor on your life?
Yeah, that was definitely, that's what they did. They, when I was in first grade, I was actually in a Catholic school when I had a nun, and she actually put me in the back of the class facing the opposite direction, you know, and she put headphones on my ears, and while the whole class was sitting the opposite way, you know, in front of, and then my sister, she was in sixth grade, she came down into the first grade hall, and I remember looking over the doorway, and she was peering through the doorway, and I remember her looking at me, and I just remember thinking, so ashamed, that, you know, but I remember going home, and my mom said, Kurt, I'm taking you out of St. Bart's. I'm going to put you in this public school, Hebron. And so when I went to Hebron, it was the second half of the year, my first grade teacher, Mrs. Dudley, she says, Kurt has dyslexia or an audio perceptual disability. And so I went to a doctor named Dr. Vincent. So I was always in the special classes, and I got held back the first year. But yeah, I went through the teasing, you know, kids called me dumb and stupid, and I was always the smallest kid, you know, I was always picked last, like in kickball, and, you know, I wasn't the greatest athlete. So that's why weights gave me a refuge. When I saw Rocky, the first Rocky movie, here's a guy that wasn't that smart, you know, but he was able to do great things with his body, and I said, I'm going to do that. And I was, like I said, I was 77. So, no, I was like 9 years old when I saw the Rocky movie. And so I must have been about 9 or 10 when I got the concrete weights. And I went out and I would run like Rocky. And it's something that definitely made me, you know.
Yes.
And that's for sure.
And I just have to say, so this is all kind of like a great setup for where we are headed next, because this start kind of put you on a path, and probably like an unexpected path that anyone from your youth would ever have thought that you would have been on. I mean, and ultimately it's culminating in bodybuilding. But before you got to bodybuilding, so I'm just going to say, some of our listeners have been to your Facebook page, and they have seen that you were in a magazine. We'll say for your physique. if I can put it that way. And I guess I assume you're comfortable with talking about it because it's posted on your Facebook page, but kind of tell us about about that experience and how that all came about.
It all came about actually in about 1994. And this is before I got reborn, and Lord Jesus Christ, I was working out at a gym, and a guy, a fellow bodybuilder, you know, he had a male review show, you know, group, and I ended up working with him doing these male reviews, and you know, dancing for the women, and this is something that really at that time that you know, it's something I never thought of myself as being, you know, sexy or anything for girls. And when I went and did the show, that was it. It was like, wow, you know, I've arrived. All these screaming women and the tit money and the dollars and I continued to do it, and I danced in you know, for male reviews in Pittsburgh and worked for several different agencies. Then I ended up getting into Playgirl magazine in 2004, and that kind of took me to the next level. And I went to Las Vegas, and I danced at the Rio for 18 months and for the Chippendales. And
whoa, stop, time out. Okay, so male reviews, and so what I was alluding to earlier is that you were in Playgirl, and you kind of just glossed over that, but so here I am to call it back out because I'm just like, whoa. But then that was a springboard to Vegas, and you danced for Chippendales?
Yes, 2004,
wow.
2005.
I mean, wow. Can't say that I've ever met a real Chippendale. I mean, I've been to a couple male reviews. All right, I was some in college, and I did go see the Thunder Down Under at one point in time. All right, Taxicab Confessions, we all have it. Desiree has been there, but I can't say that I like know like a dancer.
Oh yeah, you do now.
I do now, and I mean, I met him, and we had dinner, and I didn't know I was sitting next to, you know, at Chippendales, and a Playgirl model, and whatever else we have going on there. I'm just a little, I don't know, speechless maybe.
Reclaim.
But anyway, carry on. Reclaim. Tell us your story.
Yeah. So, actually, the issue of Playgirl came out in February 2004. And so I got out there that month, you know, because what it was is I danced for an agency called Wild Things in Pittsburgh. The guy that owned it, his name was Matt Kennedy. He went by the name Matt Kennedy. He actually got into Playgirl first. And there were scouts from New York, you know, scouting guys from Pittsburgh, and they saw the website, and they liked the way I looked on the website, and they wanted to know, okay, what's he look like now? You know, we don't really care about, you know, how he looks in these pictures on your internet. How does he look now? So they wanted to see Polaroids, you know, pictures, Polaroids of how you look right this minute. And so we took them and we sent them up there, and they said, fantastic, you know, come up for a photo shoot. And I went up and I did it. And, you know, 3 days later, they said, congratulations, you're going to be in the February 2004 issue. And,
wow.
You know, full layout. And so it was pretty awesome. And But that, and Matt,
I'm,
and
I'm
he,
glad
you
said full length. I'm glad you said full length.
He didn't say full length, but I see how you slipped that in there. He said full layout. Length had
you
nothing to do with it.
Full layout.
No, he did not.
Okay,
we're sorry. We digress. All right, all right. So you made February issue. Okay, go carry on.
And then Matt, you know, he got us out there. He was already out there, and he was headlining for the Chippendales because he got in Playgirl first. He was the first one they shot, and his issue come out in January. So mine was the next one up, and he said get out here before the issue comes out. And that way, you know, it's like a novelty because then, you know, 5,000-6,000 girls coming at in the theater every night at the Rio, Chippendales, you know, theater at the Rio. And, you know, it's a novelty, you know, to have a guy that's, you know, that month in Playgirl, you know, they set a table up for you, you sell your magazines. It gives them more business and, you know, it's a little more status type thing. But, you know, I did that, and you know. But long story short, you know, I was getting heavily into drinking before I even went to Vegas. Now, at that point, I was drinking a fifth of whiskey every day, and that's no lie. And that's and I'm working on, and you know, but it got to the point where it was getting worse out there. I was drinking more, and you know, I can remember my mom. My mom's a devout Catholic, and she just, and I remember she would say, Kurt, you know, you need to get back to church. You need to get back to God. You know, this is no way to live. This is, you know, this is no way, you know, you can't handle this, you know, and, you know, this is.
It's going to destroy you, yeah.
Right. And so 18 months later, I actually. 18 months after that issue came back, I was back in Pittsburgh, and I went to inpatient rehab, a place called Greenbrier in Washington, Pennsylvania. And I spent, you know, a month in there, and I was never at such peace. I had, like, a spiritual awakening. And ever since then, I've been completely involved in 12-step program. I'm in AA. I sponsor people. I help newer alcoholics. You know, we're in situations that I was in, you know, drinking every day, and, you know, their life is, you know, unmanageable, you know, and so my sobriety, I've been sober for 12 and a half years. June 3rd, 2005. Thanks. And that's been a journey, and it's led me to the purer things in life, you know, because, I mean, it was like, you know, from the time I was a child and I got called dummy and picked on and beat up and, you know, and I started with the weights, it was like I was running. I still had all that emotion in my heart, all that, you know, getting teased as a kid, all that pain, and I was running. And as I got older, you know, I was covering that up, you know, with the alcohol and the dancing, that was just like a cover up. It was, you know, I felt good when I was on stage and the women screaming and wanting you, and that was great. But then, you know, at the end of the night, right, it was superficial, right. And it wasn't until I got sober and got these chemicals and got everything out of me that, you know, I felt like a Jesus back into my heart that I felt peace and I felt comfort with myself. And it's been just wonderful, you know. And 4 years after I got sober, I did my first bodybuilding show in many, many years. And that was the 2009 NGA Natural Pittsburgh. And I actually took fourth place in the lightweight class. And I had tied with Shane Shinaki. In fact, Stacy Longo showed me the scorecards. And Shane Shinaki and me We both had 18 points, and she gave him the third place because he was keeping his legs flexed in a relaxed position better than I was. So I really worked on it this time. I really wanted to keep my legs flexed at all times, so I really worked on that for this last show. But, yeah, so 4 years I did my first bodybuilding show, and I actually went and got an associate's degree, you know, at a community college. But for me, it was a wonderful thing to be able to do that, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, I essentially quit high school in 11th grade, and because I had had enough. I just had a hard time. But in my sobriety, I was able to do it. I struggled. It took me 3.5 years to get a 2-year degree, but I did it, and it was very, very self gratifying to know that I could do that. And so it's been a journey. My sobriety's been a journey. God's been so good to me. And
yes, He has, and many times over. I'm going to piggyback something you're talking about because some of our listeners are very surprised. You know, they were really shocked when you were talking about your accident with your wrist, but they were even more surprised that you're with what you're talking about. And I'm going to harken back to, you know, when I was being open to who I thought was a Christian, but basically was just a church member, and he had found out, you know, that I had worked at a strip club as a bouncer, and he was basically trying to have me put out of church because of my past, but basically because of my past. And I was very hurt by that because, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm just telling you exactly who I am so you don't have to guess about it, and you're trying to use that information against me like I've sinned against God. Well, I'm telling you, yeah, I sinned against God, and yeah, I shouldn't have been bouncing at that place, but at the time it seemed like a decent way of employment. And, you know, I was just so hurt. But, you know, my pastor, like your priest was telling you, you know, you really have to do some self-reflection and self-inflection to understand who you are and whose you are, so that suffering is basically non-existent because you're just basically coming clean with your own identity. I mean, like you said, these are things you did. You might not, you know, look at them the same way now, but it's still who you were. And I'm glad that you can really open up about that and share so people don't think we have that squeaky clean identity because we never did.
Right. Right. God forgives us if we truly repent, truly mean it from the bottom of our heart. God forgives us. And if we can't forgive our fellows, then how can God forgive us? You know, So to not forgive, you know, because of somebody's past, to hold their feet to the fire, you know, God doesn't do that to us. So why should we do that to others? You know?
That's scripture.
But, yep. Exactly. Exactly.
But at the same time, it's just like, you know, bless those who persecute you. So it's, you know. You know, you walk our path and run our own race, you know, and unfortunately, you know, some people are who they are, and it's just not, but I know what you mean, you know, how that can hurt when people judge you and pass judgment on you, and they're telling you you're no good because you did this or that, or, you know. It is hurtful, and it's you want to say, hey, you know, who are you to judge me? You know, do you have a squeaky clean closet yourself? You know, and just like when Jesus said, he without sin shall cast the first stone. So in other words, unless you're completely sinless, which was Jesus, was the only person that walked on this earth that was sinless was Jesus. Unless you're completely sinless, you have no business really telling anybody about their past or what they've done. And it's just, and I try to remind myself of that when I get into situations like that, you know, when people judge you and like I said, it does emotions are emotions. It does hurt. It's, you know, but I just offer it up to God, you know, and try to move on.
And there you go. I mean, and
yep.
Sometimes that's all you can do. That's all you can do.
Right.
So I'm going to slide in here with another listener question. Gail wants to know how close you are with your mom. She thinks she sounds like a very strong woman.
Well, my mother passed away 3 years ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's been very, very tough. But my mother was a huge influence my whole life. I mean, she, you know, we used to pray to Jesus when I was like 6 years old. She had me, you know, I'd pray in tongues when I was 6 years old. We prayed all the time, you know, and I'm glad my mother instilled that in me because I don't know where I would be if I didn't know that Jesus was there and Jesus loves me. And it was my mother that constantly, even through my bad years, my bad, indulgent, non-Christian years, my mom just kept saying, "Kurt, you need to pray. You need to pray. Give it up to God. You know, you need to get back." And I would get so mad because I would want answers. I'd call my mom and I'd say, "Oh, Mom, I'm, you know, this is going on and that's going on and I don't know what to do." And she'd say, "Kurt, pray." And I would get so mad because I wanted an answer right now. But she never gave up. And like I said, when I finally got sober and put that drink down, that's when it opened up the gateway to let God in my heart. But my mother, true blessing. You know, she was always supportive of me. And like I said, I can't imagine, you know, where I would be if it wasn't for her. You know, because she's just, with her persistence, you know, she just never gave up. And not too many people have that persistence like she had. And I'm very, very blessed, you know, very blessed.
A mother's love. That is
a
blessing. Yeah. I have to piggyback that because Des and I had our mothers on. And, you know, we were nervous about it. And, you know, but, you know, with you saying that your mother's no longer here, that just made that show even more important and special because, you know, mothers are so special. And you know, as kids, we do take them for granted. And I love how my pastor had said that, you know, everything they said sounded so stupid when we were kids, but now we realize they were so smart. And as we get older, they get smarter. And I'm just so blown away by that because they never gave up, like you said. They never gave up, they never give in, and they always give hope. And that's something that's so special. And I hope the children that are listening with their parents to our show tonight just understand, you know, you've got a gift, and it's so special. And parents, and especially mothers, find that gift, and they see it, and they nourish it, and they cherish it, and they help it grow. And if you just listen. And I know I'm saying to deaf ears because kids are like, "Not my mom, she's different." Yeah, that mom too. But anyway, it's still such a joy to have. And I treasure my mom, and I hold her close and near and dear. And I'm sure I'll pass it to Des and let her finish that point.
Okay.
And I just have to say ditto to that. Love you, Mom. And you know, we've covered, like, we have been all over the board tonight on topics, and it's just kind of flowed. It's led from one thing to another, and actually we're starting to run out of time. So I'm going to pull us back a little bit to refocus on the bodybuilding. Yeah, I know. We've got less than 10 minutes left, so we're going to kind of try and roll through this. I know it. So, Kurt, two more questions I'd like to get in, and hopefully we'll have time. Adrian! Hopefully we'll have time. Hopefully we'll have time for shout-outs. But if we don't, We're all losing our mind here. All right. Question, question, question. So, with your injury, bodybuilding weight has been very influential in your life, along, you know, right next to your mom or underneath your mom. But the whole premise of lifting weights, it opened up doors you never thought it would open. Accident, recovery, coming back, making a comeback. Jeremy wants to know how you were able to get your physique, or how you were able to build it with such a damaged body part.
Well, like I said, I had to go lighter weight and higher reps. And I basically did my reps really slow. And I squeezed the muscle through a full range of motion. So that means real slow reps. And while I did the reps, I was squeezing the muscle at the same time, as if flexing. Because I knew I couldn't pile the weight on, you know, like I did before I broke my wrist. So I had to rely on different resistance. And like I said, you know, with bands, with the resistance bands, and I had to just switch things up. Did a lot of supersets and just kept moving in the gym. I had to kind of reinvent the way I worked out. And I just noticed that I was, you know, that my muscle memory, it was coming back. And it was like, whoa. And I remember telling my wife, you know, this, it doesn't make sense. How could I be getting like this when I thought I had to lift heavy and one way, like I always did for all those years. And all of a sudden I do something completely different and I'm getting my muscle back. Everything, and it's refined and it's full, and I'm getting stronger, in a sense, not weight-wise, where, you know, benching 300 pounds, but, just higher endurance, through my workouts. And it's just a matter of modifying. I mean, the way I looked at it was, people lose limbs, like legs, and they're able to run and do marathons. And I'm thinking, okay, this is a risk. This is a big thing, especially with what I do, but I can do this. And once I made my mind up that I was going to do it, I did whatever it took. I got in the gym, and I was not going to fail. Pretty much how I went for it.
Okay, well, you got a lot of the listeners, like, really tuned in right now, because they're saying that your muscles are really full, considering that you didn't go heavy. And I you're also touching on something that's really something with the muscle maturity and muscle memory. And that's, because a lot of people think you got to go all heavy all the time.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, you're
oh, really?
Breaking up pretty bad, Kalen. Yeah, now you sound
yeah,
great.
I'm sorry.
The last couple minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I heard you guys just fine, but it's probably me. I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you now.
So go ahead and repeat your question.
Okay. A lot of the listeners are really surprised that he's not going really heavy, because most people, when they get to the gym and they're trying to get into prep mode or beast mode or whatever they're thinking, that they have to go all heavy all the time, and they're really shocked that, you were able to bring that kind of physique and not go as heavy as they were thinking. So, could you just touch on that again and explain a little bit better that you don't have to be like Superman in the gym, just basically super
right.
focused and dedicated.
Right. It's not the amount of weight. It's how you work that weight. Like bodybuilding, you're working the muscle. So you're using the weight to sculpt your muscle. It's not about the amount of weight. So it's taking that weight and squeezing the muscle, and you're using it, you know, through a full range of motion, whatever body part you're doing, and working that muscle and pumping the blood into it and squeezing it, you know, at the top of your rep, you know, squeeze at the top of your rep. Bring it down slowly on the negative, and when you get down to the negative, stop, squeeze the muscle again, and bring it up slow. And while you're bringing it up, squeezing your muscle through the full range of motion all the way up, and just leave that tension on the muscle at all times. So it's not the amount of weight. You don't have to do super, super heavy weight. It's doing lighter weight and doing strict form. You know, your muscles respond to strict reps. You know, you're squeezing the muscle, and just like you're making a muscle, and you're just squeezing it and working at, and that's how you got to do it. And that's what bodybuilding is. It's not powerlifting, and like a lot of bodybuilders, they want to go heavy,
right?
Because they think that the heavy weight is going to bring their muscles up, and 9 out of 10, heavier weight is going to tear up your joints, your ligaments. You're going to have problems. Like, I got shoulder problems now. I don't have any cartilage left in my right shoulder. You know,
wow.
Barely. You know, and that's another thing. This was like 2 years ago. That, you know, doctor said, he goes, you have no cartilage in your shoulder, and you have arthritis all through it. And he goes, if you keep lifting heavy, heavy weight, you're going to need a shoulder replacement in a few years.
Wow.
A couple years ago. So that was even before the accident. So I had lightened up on my shoulder work before then, but I was still going heavy bench presses and, you know, and essentially back, you know, back, I love doing back. And you don't need to go real heavy. I mean, just squeeze, you know, bent over rows, you know, lighter weight. Do full range and just bring it up full rep and squeeze it into your chest. Your T-bar rows, squeeze it. And if you do your reps right, you don't need to go heavy. That's the great thing about bodybuilding in itself is you're sculpting your body like a piece of artwork. And you're using the weights, you know, as your paintbrushes, you know, and that's I like the art form of bodybuilding. You know, you're creating art out of your body, making it the best that it can be.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Okay, last question. You obviously did fantastic at the NGA East Coast Natural. What's up next for you? Do you have any other shows planned for the rest of the year, or are you taking some time off, or what's Kirk got in the future?
Yeah, I'm actually gonna take a little time off here. My family and I, we're gonna go on a Disney cruise next Monday for 5 days.
Oh.
And then I'm going back to work. I'm in the laborers union. So I want to stay off the scaffolds. I'm not going to. I'm going to stay on the ground. But after 14 months, it'll be 15 by then, I'm finally going back to work and see how it goes. You know, see how the wrist holds up, and hopefully, you know, I don't have to change careers or anything, but leave it in God's hands, you know.
Well,
there
you
go.
And that's the best place to leave it. So with that, Kurt, we just want to say thanks so much for sharing your very colorful story with us this evening. I know I've enjoyed it. Our listeners have as well. And we just wish you all the best in your future endeavors and have a great vacation.
Oh, thanks, Desiree. Great talking to you and Cameron.
Right. Have a great one. So, with that.
I have to laugh at that. Yeah. Thank you, Doodle.
So on behalf of that, on behalf of myself, Cameron, both recipe for team muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
With Cameron, Snickerdoodle.